Hi there. Heard any good Stone stories lately? It's been hard to hear anything but over the past week or so. We've heard from Rolling Stones experts, from pop culturists, from musicologists, but the big prize has arrived. Yesterday, at about supper time, the Rolling Stones charter jet landed at the Regina Airport. Mick, Keith, and company waved to a few well-wishers, hopped into limos, and headed off to their hotel. Now, the game is on. This place is buzzing with, if not actual stories, the potential of running into someone who plays in the greatest band on earth. The Stones play one show Friday and another Sunday night, and that leaves Saskatchewan people about 72 hours to try to catch a glimpse of the Rolling Stones in their on-the-road environment. Will you see Mick at McDonald's? Keith at the Body Shop? Southern Saskatchewan is on Stones Watch. I'm Paul Dornstouter. And this is Saskatchewan This Week, your guide to modern living in Saskatchewan, as played out on the airwaves of CBC Radio 1. Today, we'll talk a bit about the Stones, we'll talk about some other stuff, and my pledge to you is that I will not make a single tortured attempt to work the title of a Rolling Stones song into our conversation. So sit back, breathe a little easier, and don't wave your lighters till the end of the show. First stop, the stage. Crews have been building the Rolling Stones stage for about a week now at Taylor Field in Regina. It's colossal. Dale Scherseth is the show's production manager, and he gave CBC Radio a backstage tour.
All right, where do you want me to start?
How big is this thing?
Bigger than anything out there on the road right now. You want dimensions? It's 90 feet high, 203 feet wide, and 100 feet deep, and doesn't stop. It just goes. It's 70 trucks in total for each event. We have three steel systems. As you see, the one is there, and one is coming out of Missoula right now, and one is getting ready to go into Chicago. And then 35 trucks travel with the show that come into every city, and we put it up. Voodoo Lounge was about 25 trucks, and this is 10 more. That's for the onstage experience. There's two levels. There's a lower level one and another level two. That is for the onstage people to have the onstage experience, seeing what the band sees. You see, the fans. It's the excitement of the crowd that comes at you. It's everything that's there. Setup takes will take 8 hours for production. It takes 4 8-hour to 10-hour days to put up the steel, and it takes 8 hours to do the production, and then we'll pull it out tonight, Sunday night. The crew's all into it. We've been out for almost 18 months now. There's nothing can stop us. We're just, it's a machine right now and well-oiled. So coming in, they're all well-rested. Everybody will show up here within the next hour, and we'll start work. A lot of people with the tour have been with the tour since even Steel Wheels. So they've been around, and some are new, but everybody's an experienced person. You know, once one tour ends, they go to another job. So it continues on. So everybody's well experienced and well interested in doing their job right. It's the big gray whale because it's big and it's gray, and that's all. What it looks like in the light and what it looks like at night is two different things, because it looks just like this big gray collage of, you know, artwork, and then when the lights go down and we turn on our effects, it just lights up. From the beginning of the show to the end is full entertainment, from the band putting on a great show to all the effects that come with it, and everything that goes along with a Rolling Stones package. It's an event within itself, you know.
Do they know this is the biggest show in Regina's history?
Yes. Yes. They do their homework.
Dale Scherseth is production manager of the Rolling Stones tour. So, how do you quench the thirst of some 80,000 Rolling Stones fans? Well, if you're a Saskatchewan brewery, you make a whole lot of beer. The Great Western Brewing Company is the official supplier of beer to the concerts. Now, Ron Waldman runs the company, and he spoke with Blue Sky's Jennifer Gibson.
Hi, Ron.
Hi, so good to be with you.
Well, I bet. What a good gig you've got this weekend, hey?
It truly is an exciting event to be part of, that from start to finish, that's for sure.
Now, how did you manage to get the market, to get the beer market for this concert?
Well, really, we were asked to put a proposal, to prepare a proposal, and we assumed that those proposals would be sought from, you know, all the large, particularly the national brewing companies,
mm-hmm.
and we understand that was the case, and we we put a team together and quickly put together a proposal of what we thought we could do to make it better, different, and special. And it was received by the promoters in Canada, Donald K. Donald, on behalf of the Rolling Stones organization, and then carefully reviewed by the Rolling Stones organization. And at the end of the day, they came back to us and said, we'd like to work with you. We're
wow.
excited about your ideas.
So what do you think it was about your proposal that made you successful?
I think the Rolling Stones have a history where it's possible and where there's proven alternatives to seek out what makes a market unique, different, and local.
Mm-hmm.
Because that was also the case where they chose Moosehead Breweries in New Brunswick a couple years ago.
Okay.
So I think they had confidence once they did their due diligence that at least in Western Canada, or certainly in Saskatchewan and Western Canada, there are regional breweries that are capable of rising to the occasion. And in this case, in Saskatchewan, we were pleased to fill that role.
Okay, now let's get down to the nitty-gritty here, Ron. How much Please. Beer are we talking about?
Well, it's hard to know because of the weather circumstances how much beer will actually be consumed. But our preparations take us well over 360,000 servings for the pre-event and concert itself. So, you know, obviously our Rolling Stones associates have said to us in no uncertain terms that their experience with these events are such that the worst thing in the world for them to ever do is run out of beer. So they want to make sure that that was one of their core questions and one of their core investigations is to ensure that, you know, we could provide all the necessary brew and also provide the logistics and prepare for an over-expectation and a reloading between concerts. So there's a lot of logistics and planning that go on to make sure that it's a seamless, outstanding guest experience, and that is really what everyone has been focusing on, making this the most memorable concert event in the history of the province.
So did they have somebody come and check out your facilities to make sure that you could brew that much beer?
Well, I think what they did is they relied on varying sources of throughout the province that could validate. You know, clearly it's a big part of the decision entertainment matrix for this event. So they didn't want to go in the wrong direction. I just also want to thank Mayor Fiacco for. We understand that he was very prominent in making sure that the Rolling Stones organization knew that they had at least three alternatives to consider as opposed to just two. So we really appreciate the idea because we're very proud of being Saskatchewan's brewing company, and having an event like this certainly wasn't ever thought that this might happen.
Yeah, yeah.
And so it's just really exciting to be part of.
Oh, I bet. I bet indeed. So what do you have to do do you have to do anything extra to prepare for brewing all that beer?
Well, our brewmaster and brewing and packaging team were very comfortable with the incremental amount of beer that was required for this particular event because in the whole scheme of things, the nature of our business is that this is not such a significant amount of product that it would put an extra number of shifts on our facility. It would. It's just more and more of a planning exercise. We have never, and we would never sell at any one time this amount of beer in any occasion that we've been associated with. And it is the largest single sampling event for any brewery. In the history of the province, and certainly for our brewery in our history, to have the occasion to potentially sample 90,000 fans is just a rather unique and fortuitous circumstance.
Well, and the promotional benefit for you to just be identified with the Rolling Stones is
we think
is
it's
imagine-
a pretty good deal.
Yeah, I bet you. I bet you do.
Yeah.
Should I be going out to stock up before the events are over, so that I know that there's going to be some beer after the concert's done?
Well, that's another thing. We would encourage you to add our beer to your fridge inventory. But one of the things that's really interesting, in addition to the pre-concert events that start at early in the afternoon and lead up to the concert, the fact that two interesting facts. First off, when the Stones take stage, all beverage service of any alcohol type stops.
Oh, that's very interesting.
And so there will be a 2 to 2.5 hour period in which no beer will be sold, and not necessarily not consumed, but certainly not sold during that time. And they have a limited opportunity to purchase on per occasion purchase. I think there's 2 servings per purchasing occasion. So responsible use is a large part of the equation as well. Secondly, what's really exciting is there will be 40,000 out-of-town guests visiting Regina in the next couple of few days. And the hospitality industry in Regina has done a superlative job in planning after Stones pre-concert events, after concert events. The hotels have just gone out of their way to work in a seamless way to ensure that this event, and for all the people coming to Regina in a part from around the beyond the surrounding area, will really have a memorable experience. And so in addition to the Stones concert, we're doing a tremendous amount of promotional activity after the events at restaurants, pubs, bars, lounges, and so on, just so that people can in fact enjoy themselves in a responsible way, but clearly the party will continue after the concert.
Clearly indeed. Well, it's very exciting for you and your company, especially a Saskatchewan company, to get this kind of a gig. Now, were you a Stones fan before this whole thing started?
You know, I've always wanted to go to a Stones concert and had opportunities in the past and never quite was able to do it, but I'm very glad to have that opportunity. In fact, we're taking our entire family.
And, wow.
We have a young family of 14, 11, and 9, in addition to my wife and I. So we're really excited to share that with them. I'm a 60s, 70s, and 80s Stones music fan. I haven't followed them as much in the later 80s and 90s and beyond, but they are icons. They're known as the biggest and best rock band in the world, and they've spanned 5 generations of music, so this will be an incredible happening. We're glad to be there.
Tell me, because you're, you know, the official beer sponsor, does that mean you get to go backstage and meet the boys?
No.
you
know what? The truth is that the Stones organization has been incredibly hospitable to their sponsors and wanting to make sure that we also have a great experience. So we have a number of guests that we've invited that will have exposure to, you know, backstage events and things of that nature. My poor sales team, the shoemaker's daughter gets shoes last. So it's really a situation that we want to, part of our opportunity naturally is to make sure that our customers have this amazing experience and they associate it with us. So in the future, they'll think upon us fondly.
I'm sure. Well, if you have run in with any of them, you be sure and give us a call. We'd love to talk to you about it.
That would be terrific. And I certainly want to thank you very much for your interest.
Oh, absolutely. And have a great time at the show.
Are you not going?
I actually am not. I saw them in Edmonton and it was an awesome show. And it was just one of those things where I thought, oh, I've seen them. That's good.
Well, then for sure, if we have the occasion to chat again soon, I'll share all of it with you.
That would be great. Thanks
a
lot, Ron.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Ron Waldman, president of the Great Western Brewing Company, speaking with Jennifer Gibson. Now, the Rolling Stones weren't the only folks making noise in Saskatchewan this week. Some kids in Moose Jaw are making a statement of their own. Call it youthful rebellion or call it a shout-out for the Civil Liberty set. These kids like their coffee crisp. About 300 students at a Moose Jaw high school have signed a petition. They want the school board to reverse its decision to ban the sales of junk food on school premises. Ashley Isbister is 15. She presented her petition to the Moose Jaw school board. Then she spoke with the Afternoon Edition's Colin Gruer.
So what exactly does your petition say?
It basically says that the students would rather have their choice on what they want to eat instead of having the school board force it on us.
And why did you decide it was time for a petition?
Well, a lot of students have been upset about it, but no one was really willing to do anything about it, so I just decided to stand up and do something.
What is available now in the school, you know, at the canteens and in the vending machines?
Not very much. They've got, instead of the pop machines, they have water and juice. And in the concessions, they've got chicken burgers, just little things like fruit salads, some salads, cookies, muffins, just things like that. But there isn't that much.
Yeah, and what are you missing the most then? I mean, that doesn't sound too bad to me, but what junk food are you missing?
Well, before we would have like taco in a bag every Wednesday. We would have fries, hamburgers, different things like that.
Uh-huh.
But now we don't have any of it.
And the vending machines?
So we used to have pop, like a pop machine per floor.
And no more?
Nope.
Yeah. No chocolate bars either, I understand.
No.
Yeah. So what's it been like? I mean, what's it been like then without all this junk food available?
Well, without it, there's a lot less students there at lunch.
Where do they go?
Everybody goes down to Main Street because we have about 15, 16 different restaurants down there. So everyone's going to either fast food restaurants, the mall, or 7-Eleven to get everything that we want instead.
And is that a bad thing for the school, do you feel?
Yeah, because, well, we're still on school time. So if we get hit by a car crossing the street or something, the school could easily be sued.
Uh-huh. Because I guess, yeah, the argument would be you could bring, you know, your own junk food into the school, can't you?
Yeah.
So do a lot of people do that, or do they just disappear for the entire lunch hour then?
Some people bring stuff to school. Some people just leave.
No.
Basically everything.
Yeah. Now, did you try anything before the petition route to you know, to maybe get the school to bend a little bit on this?
Not really, because there wasn't really anything else we could do. Like, the students had said different things about it. Like, in assemblies, a lot of students had complained about it, but we couldn't do anything, so.
Now, I guess the school board introduced this ban on junk food for, you know, pretty legitimate reasons. They want to help develop good, healthy eating habits among younger people. They want to combat the growing rates of obesity in young people. I mean, what do you think of those goals?
I agree with them. Like, I'm a healthy eater myself. I just, like, through elementary and everything, they've taught us how to eat healthy. They've given us the facts. They've given us the information. And in high school, I think we should be able to make our own decisions with those facts and information.
Do you think that you say you like to eat healthy food, but do you think you're in the majority here? I mean, when you look at the eating habits of those around you, well, you described everybody leaving the school to go and buy junk food. Do you think that message got through?
To some people, yes, and some people, no. Like, a lot of people I know aren't big junk food eaters, but every now and then they feel like some, and we just can't get it now at school, so they're going wherever they can to get it.
So what would you like to see change then at the school exactly?
I'd like to have it back the way it was, where at the concession they had healthy food and junk food. That way people could choose what they wanted. It's more the choice than anything that I'm after.
The choice. Yeah, to be given the right to make the choice on your own.
Yeah.
Yeah. What are your friends saying about this petition?
They're all for it.
Yeah, you didn't have to look too far to get 300 names in your petition?
No. Yeah. The majority of them are all my friends agreeing with me.
What do your parents think?
My parents are all for it.
Yeah. So what response did you get from the school board when you presented your petition today?
Well, it seemed like it was good.
What made you think it seemed like it was good?
Well, they were all saying they were proud of me, and whenever I'd bring up points, they were always nodding or smiling at me. It didn't seem like they were very close-minded.
Okay.
It seemed like they were very open-minded towards it.
So there may be some hope for you then, eh?
Hopefully.
Yeah? Okay. Why is this so important to you personally, Ashley? I mean, a lot of younger people just, you know, that's the way things are. The school makes the rules, and that's the way it's going to be. What made you take this on?
I like to stand up for my rights, and I don't like people taking away my choice.
Even when it comes to the food you eat?
Yes. It's one of the small decisions we should at least be able to make.
Well, Ashley, thank you very much for joining us today.
You're welcome.
Okay, bye-bye now.
Bye.
Ashley Isbister speaking with the Afternoon Edition's Colin Gruer. So, how's this movement playing across the province? Blue Sky's Jennifer Gibson put that question to the folks listening to the radio.
We get started with Craig, who's calling from Oyen. Hello, Craig.
Hello.
So what do you think?
Well, I kind of think, you know, that if we start eliminating the student's ability to make the right choice or the healthy choice, then we impede their ability to choose what is right. And if we force them to do it, we know what happens in adolescence, and that is basically that they will do whatever you tell them they can't do.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of think that it's not a good thing, and instead we should maybe make the parents and the teachers in our society in general start to adopt healthy choices and make kids, adolescents, everyone realize that it's a healthier choice, not for themselves, but for society as a whole. So by forcing them to do it, you won't get anywhere.
So do you think that it's better to lead by example?
Lead by example, and and don't make anything black market or against the rules, because that's going to be the first choice of an adolescent child.
What about the idea that if you could equate it to cigarettes, that if you just don't see them, you might not think about it as much. So if you didn't see the chocolate bars and the pop, you might not eat them.
Well, when I heard the topic come on the radio today, that's exactly what I thought of, cigarettes. It's still legal for adults to choose to smoke tobacco, even though they can't see it. It's still a choice that they have, and most people still do it. We already know that tobacco smokers consume most of our healthcare dollars, have a lower life expectancy, and way more complications on just about every other medical condition.
Mm-hmm.
And we're still letting them have that choice. So why are we saying that teenagers in their schools don't have that choice, yet adults have a choice to smoke?
Okay.
You know, if we want to outlaw junk food, why don't we outlaw cigarettes?
Fair enough.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for your call, Craig.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Alfred is calling from Riverhurst. Hi, Alfred.
Hello, how are you today?
Good, how are you?
Just fine, thanks.
So what do you think?
Well, the last time I looked, I thought we flew the Maple Leaf, got the hammer and sickle.
Oh.
You know, I didn't make all the right choices in my life. I'm sure there's nobody that can say they really have. So I still think they should be able to make the choice, though.
Well, some people might argue they can. They can go down to the 7-Eleven and or the corner store and buy it.
But, well, like I heard you talk about the last person there, the last caller, about the cigarettes. I'm an ex-smoker. I think about it, or I always did think about it. I mean, even if they did cover up, you still think about it. You know it's there.
Yeah.
I once had a person say, well, you know, why do they advertise this stuff? All it does is make you want to go out and buy this stuff because they're advertising it. And I said, no, it doesn't. I mean, I don't have the urge to go out and buy a new truck every time they advertise one.
You don't? Well, that's a good thing.
Well, exactly. So, I mean, it's a person's mindset as far as I'm concerned. If you're inclined to do that, you're going to do it.
Okay. All right.
So I think the people should have the choice to pick what they want.
All right. Thanks, Alfred.
Thank you.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Dina's calling in Regina. Hi, Dina.
Hi there.
How's it going?
Good, good.
What do you think?
Well, I thought that it'd be interesting to just sort of make a bland comment in terms of suggesting that it wasn't really a bold decision that the Moose Jaw School Board has made, but just more a rational decision. I think school boards have been making these decisions for years and years in terms of their nutrition programs and offering nutrition for various schools that, and especially schools designated as community schools that have demonstrated a need that children aren't receiving proper nutrition and it's affecting their learning.
Mm-hmm.
And also in schools, school boards have been instrumental in implementing food allergy restrictions for the safety of others and for the improvement of others' health and by not allowing nuts and fish products and fish oil products and so forth so that people in the school are protected, children are protected. So there have been nutritional decisions that have been made for years that are rational decisions. And to suggest that you're reducing choices of individuals by just not offering junk food in a school setting it's just kind of nonsensical. In our school in particular, we have probably within a four-block radius at least six convenience stores that offer chips, chocolate bars, candies. It's a good walk. Go out for a bit of fresh air. Go for a walk. Buy yourself some junk food. Mm-hmm. There's no end of choice available in those stores. There's no end of choices available to students, to youth, to young adults, to adults, to purchase these items. I think that we'd all be irresponsible to suggest that a billion-dollar industry that's the advertising industry on behalf of the junk food companies and the fast food industry is not effective and doesn't have an impact on us as adults and especially on children.
Mm-hmm.
And they spend billions and billions on these industries, and obviously they're effective. So you talk about choice. I think children's choices are continuously being eroded by that industry, suggesting that those foods are good options for them. And then we've got the health impact down the road of people making those choices. And then that starts to reduce everyone's choice later in life in terms of health accessibility to services and the stresses upon health services because of those foods and those choices.
What about the argument that the first two callers brought up, that these kids need to be able to make their own choices, that perhaps our role needs to be, as I say, our, as you know, the adults or their guardians in their lives, that we need to lead more by example and educate them about pros and cons so they can make their own choice down the road?
Oh, I mean, the one gentleman that made the comment about, you know, providing a living example is extremely appropriate. I think that's really important as adults to do that and to eat properly and provide proper foods in the home, but also as a social responsibility in terms of our social services, offering good and healthy and decent foods in public service sectors. Another public service sector would be considered hospitals. I think it would be ludicrous to suggest that we should offer no end of choices on the dietary menu for people that are inpatients because they want those foods.
Mm-hmm.
They don't necessarily need them, but a lot of the time those poor food choices have led them to be there.
Mm-hmm.
But you would, you know, succumb to those demands because they feel that they should have access to chocolate bars and chips for their dinner plate at lunch while they're an inpatient. So as a public service and as taxpayers, I think that we have obligations, and as voters, we have obligations to establish services in healthcare, in education, in our civic water services and our disposal services that are healthy decisions, good decisions. I mean, take a look at the impact that garbage has on our social services and our health because of the fast food industry, because of those poor choices as well. That's another issue to bring up. There's so much garbage and junk and packaging remnants from that kind of an industry that we all suffer from, trying to find healthy disposal areas and using up good land for those healthy disposal areas. And our streets and our schools and our parks are littered with all that junk.
Okay.
So there's lots of good social issues that make that a really rational decision.
Thanks for your call today, Dina.
Okay.
Okay.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Jennifer Gibson and some of the legion of listeners to Blue Sky. You can catch the show from noon till 2 on CBC Radio 1 in Saskatchewan. So that's it. That's the show for today. If you like what you heard, you can check out all sorts of other CBC Radio podcasts at cbc.ca/podcasting. I'm Paul Dornstouter. Thanks for joining me. I'll catch you again next week.